This is Your Legal Rights. I'm Chuck Finney. On this segment of Your Legal Rights, we're going to be talking about tips for preparing your 2012 income tax return. And for those of you who are listening to us live, we also have our annual Call a CPA night, and I will let you know the number to call in just a few minutes. My guests on the air are David Hellman, an attorney who's a specialist in both tax law and estate planning, trusts, and probate law, certified by the Board of Legal Specialization of the State Bar. He's also a CPA. My other guest is attorney Krista Denton, low-income taxpayer clinic director, the Justice and Diversity Center of the Bar Association of San Francisco. Funding for Your Legal Rights is made possible by the Board of Legal Specialization of the State Bar of California, which certifies has the following 11 fields of law: taxation law, appellate law, bankruptcy law, criminal law, estate planning, trust and probate law, family law, franchise and distribution law, immigration and nationality law, workers' compensation law, legal malpractice law, and admiralty and maritime law. Additional funding is provided by the Family Law Section of the State Bar and the Lawyer Referral Service of the Bar Association of San Francisco. Krista and David, welcome.
Thank you.
Thank you very much for coming here. What I'd like to do, if you would, in this first half hour, which is a statewide version of the program, is focus on a few things. We can't cover everything, but let me just ask you, David, if you would do this. In the economy that we have now with, I think, a lot of people are suffering from not having jobs or having jobs that don't pay that much, and younger people who may have wanted to be more independent and on their own are not finding that they can do that, and either staying in their parents' homes or they're returning to their parents' home and may not be making as much as $3,800, I guess, either adjusted gross income or whatever it is in the tax code, and may well qualify as a dependent for their parents. I wonder if you talk a little bit about that and what that means, and what it means for the parents in terms of their tax returns.
Right. Well, if the child is living at home, and this could also be other family members, parents of the taxpayers, brothers, sisters.
So there has to be some family relationship.
Well, there's also an exception
for
other. And so if you have same-sex couple, that's a potential too. So at any rate, it does need to be a person who's living full-time at the home. Income, as you indicated, very little. The taxpayer has to be providing more than half of the support so that then that person for whom the support's provided can be claimed as a dependent. So that
even if that person is well over, let's say, what the age is for a child qualifying.
Right.
With
the normal child qualifying is 18. If they're a student, they will let you go between 19 to 24. And then after that, you need to have, you're no longer a qualifying child. You'd have to go under the other dependency rules, which apply to all these other relationships.
Which do not have an age requirement, is that right?
Yes, that's correct.
Okay. Go ahead.
Yeah, so what that does is you get the dependency exemption. You're allowed to take expenses for them for medical, if you're paying for their medical. If there are tuition payments that they've made and you're entitled to, depending on your income level, you may be entitled to use a credit or a deduction for expenses.
But that requires that the parent pay the tuition?
Generally, that's going to be the case.
Okay.
But you're going to get a notice from the school that's probably going to be in the child's name with their Social Security number on it.
How do you deal with that as
a
parent?
Because the IRS, you're going to be reporting that Social Security number for the dependent on your income tax return, showing them as a dependent, so that ties it together.
I see. So in effect, if the parent pays the tuition for the child, who may be a full-blown adult,
right,
and the child is now a dependent on the parent's tax return, as long as you put the Social Security number of the child on your return.
Which you have to do to get the dependent exemption.
And then you can actually take that tuition deduction. Is that right?
Well, yes, if you qualify, if you're not over the income levels.
I see. Okay, and over the income level is $3,800, is it not?
No, I'm talking about the income levels for the parents because there's a phase out of that.
I see.
So you get a high income taxpayer and they're going to lose the tuition deduction or credit.
What number is that?
I'm not remembering specifically, but it's in the $120,000 range, as I recall.
Does that apply to the medical expenses also?
No, the medical expenses are phased out. For older taxpayers, it's still 7.5%, but now for
adjusted gross income.
But for 2013 forward, they're putting it at a 10% rate for most taxpayers,
except
older ones.
Okay. My understanding, and correct me if I'm wrong on this, is if the child has applied for, as most young people have, who have gone on to college or beyond college to professional like law school or medical school, they've taken out the government loans. My understanding is that if the child is actually the person on the contract for the government loan, even if the parent pays the principal and interest every month, because the child is the signator on the loan, the contract for the loan, the parent cannot take that interest expense. Is that right?
Yes, that's correct.
Okay. All right. There is something also, I wonder if you would clarify this, with respect to, for one thing, coming back to medical expenses, that would include such things as if someone had been covered by medical insurance policy, but perhaps had lost his or her job or moved on and now was covered by COBRA. If the parent is paying the COBRA insurance premium or COBRA premium, the parent could take that also as a deduction. Could the parent not?
Yes, it's part of the medical expense.
Okay, all right. So that there's no limitation there on the medical. What about earned income credit? I'm wondering if you would talk a little bit about that. What is the significance of that, if any, with respect to one of these young people who is being taken as a dependent on the parent's tax return?
Well,
does that even play? Is that even relevant?
Well, it depends on the parent's income level. If the parents have very modest income, it might allow for more of a credit there. The basic earned income credit, though, was designed initially for just working adults with young children that were their dependents. But an individual alone can be entitled to the earned income credit if they are low income. So what we normally do would compare what ends up with the least tax liability or the most refund between the parents and the children, whether the child is taken as a dependent or whether they are reporting on their own and may get an earned income credit back of a fairly healthy amount of money.
What does that mean? Can you give us a simple example of the earned income credit with some numbers that would help us to understand that?
If your income's around $3,800, you might end up getting back $1,000 in that range.
Really?
Yes.
But only if you had had, of whatever income you had that deducted. Is that correct?
No. I mean, if you're just a very low-income taxpayer, it's essentially their government's giving you money.
Really?
It's a form of public relief.
So yeah. It's free money.
It's free money for very low income people.
Free mola, mula.
Yes.
I didn't realize that. So you don't. So if you had, for example, a tax return or a W-2 form that you got with respect to the past year for 2012, and you had made, let's say, under $3,000, and there had only been, and assuming this is a correct reduction for income tax, $17, you could still apply for the earned income credit and get as much as several hundred dollars at least?
Yes.
Wow.
But it does.
What a boondoggle.
Yes.
But Krista, please.
I just wanted to point out that it does have to be earned income. So unemployment benefits, anything that's not earned. So
right.
W-2, 1099 from a contract worker.
That's
so you
very
can't.
Interesting.
So if you have both forms of income, you have to make sure that you calculate your earned income tax credit only on the money that you do earn. And that's a really good incentive for a lot of people who may fall below the threshold of having to file a tax return to file one, because they may, in fact, get money back, particularly if they have children. And also it's a good way to protect yourself from identity theft.
All right. We have our CPAs there. And frankly, I'm looking at one of the CPAs, and he's not on the phone. And the number is 1-800-525-9917. Please take advantage of the fact that we have several CPAs here. This is our annual program where we do actually have CPAs come in, and they're involved with the California Society of CPAs, San Francisco office, and I want to see them work. So call 1-800-525-9917. That's 1-800-525-9917. In a few minutes, we'll take some calls on the air. You might want to jot down our studio number, 1-415-841-4134. 1-415-841-4134. This is Your Legal Rights. I'm Chuck Finney. We're doing our annual tips for preparing at least this year's 2012 income tax return. If you haven't prepared your 2011 or 2010, we'll talk about that, too, if you want to call in sometime during the program. My guests are Krista Denton. She's the Low Income Taxpayer Clinic Director. Now, she is not low income herself, but, but as far as I know, she doesn't look like it. Low Income Taxpayer Clinic Director, the Justice and Diversity Center of the Bar Association of San Francisco, and our regular certified specialist in taxation, who's been a terrific guy with us for how many years that we've been doing this, David?
I've lost
more than
count.
10. More,
yes,
yeah,
more
I mean,
than 10.
Yeah, yeah, okay. And both of us were teenagers when we started. David Hellman is a specialist in both tax law and estate planning, trust, and probate law. He's also a CPA. He's certified by the Board of Legal Specialization of the State Bar. His offices are in Marin County. So, Krista, would you do this? I know when you brought this to my attention a few weeks ago, there were a number of things that you wanted to try to cover that would alert people to avoiding scams, etc. So get us started, if you would.
Well, I'd like to start off by reminding everyone that Monday, April the 15th, is the deadline to file your tax return. Many people have already filed. However, it wasn't until March 4th that the IRS had all of their updated forms available that would allow many taxpayers, those who were taking, say, business deductions or special energy credits, things that weren't of the norm, those weren't available. So the IRS has realized that that's going to put many taxpayers in the position of having to file for an extension, which will allow them to file their tax return up until October the 15th. Now, it's a form that you do have to file by the 15th, and you do have to make an estimated payment of what your taxes are. One exception that's different this year is that when you're estimating your taxes, and then you do your final return, if you were incorrect on your estimate, you are not going to be charged a penalty, because they realize with all the changes in the tax code this year that it's not quite as easy to figure that out up front. And I also wanted to mention that the absolute worst thing you can do is not file your tax return. So you get your tax return all done, and it says that you owe $2,000. There's no way that you can pay it. Don't let that be a reason not to file it. You'll just make things worse for yourself. The IRS really has developed a lot of generous programs that allow people to go into installment payments to pay it back. And also they have what they're calling the Fresh Start Initiative for offering compromise for very low-income individuals, where they really look at your situation and try to work with you and lower your taxes.
When you say very low-income, what are we talking about?
There really isn't a set number on it,
okay.
But they look at, basically someone without a lot of assets, but not a lot of income to cover their living expenses. And by that, they look at what the national standards are, which sometimes hurts those of us who live in a high cost of living place, because the caps might be lower than what we're actually spending. But they look at how much money each month you have left over and look at how much you owe, and they do they look at it various different ways, mm-hmm. depending upon each taxpayer, to come mm-hmm. up with a number to get it down to that perhaps you could pay it off, and then give you time to pay that off as well. So that is a good thing. But I would be wary of anyone who's asking you to pay. If you're someone who falls into that category and they're wanting to charge you $5,000 to do an offer and compromise, turn around, wow. run the other way, and you should probably yes. call, yeah, someplace who would be perhaps be able to assist you.
Who would you call?
You know, I think a good place to call is a low-income taxpayer clinic, and we are not the only one in the Bay Area. There are four in the Bay Area, mm-hmm. and actually there are clinics that are funded by the Taxpayer Advocate Service, which is part of the IRS, mm-hmm. all over the United States. And so if you go to the IRS website, just www.irs.gov, and type in low-income taxpayer clinics, they will list all of the clinics and the languages really? That they speak, and you can call them. And basically, there's eligibility requirements, one of which is your income for your household.
And I know you told me before we went on the air that this, and correct me, maybe I'm wrong on this, but you gave me a figure of $51,000 and you can get free assistance. Now, is that true? Is that
No. For the low-income taxpayer clinics, it's 250% of federal poverty okay. guideline. There is a comparable program called the Volunteer Income Tax Assistance Sites, mm-hmm. and they're located all over the country, and there's over 200 in the Bay Area. And if you have a household income of less than $51,000, mm-hmm. they will prepare your taxes for free, and they will even do some of your past year returns, and some sites actually will specialize in the needs of the elderly or those with AIDS, and they speak other languages.
How do you find them?
You can call 211, the United Way, to find out, or if really? You have access to the internet, really the best way is to go to the IRS website again and type in volunteer tax assistance, and they will ask, there's a prompt to put in your zip code, and mm-hmm. they'll give you out a list of the different places, their hours, what they will do, and the languages that they speak.
That's wonderful. Now, is this something also, the volunteer tax assistance program, is this also something that is part of the IRS?
Yes, they are also funded by the wow. Taxpayer Advocate Service.
Gee, that's terrific.
Yeah, and some of these, and for those people who have to file an extension, there are sites that are open year-round, and they mm-hmm. can help you if file.
At no charge. At no charge, right?
At no charge.
That's marvelous.
Yes.
How about do you have some, when you brought this to my attention a few weeks ago, you were very concerned about potential scams that consumers may be sucked into in terms of tax preparation. Can you briefly talk about that? And
yes.
let me do this. Before you do, what I want to do is alert everybody that we have a number that you can call to speak to. I still see that CPA who's not on the phone. This is not good. I want you to take advantage of the fact that this is our yearly CPA Call a CPA night. And it's 1-800-525-9917. Either most of you are not going to prepare a tax return, or as Krista had said, you've already done your tax return, and I can't believe it's the latter. I can't believe it's the latter. You don't want to play. Come on, 1-800-525-9917. And by the way, we will take your calls on the air in just a few minutes. That number, 1-415-841-4134. This is Your Legal Rights. I'm Chuck Finney. This is our annual tips for preparing your 2012 income tax return. It's also our Call a CPA night if you're listening to us live. And Krista, would you do this, please? You were concerned about, when you brought this to my attention, you were concerned about potential scams mm-hmm. that consumers may be dragged into. Can you talk about that briefly?
Yes, and a lot of those are targeted to non-English speaking populations mm-hmm. and the elderly. And one of the things that's going on right now is that taxpayers are being asked to sign a blank return. Mm-hmm. Never do that. Or they have a prepare return, and the person who prepared their return does not sign it and give them a copy. And the danger there, what's going on oftentimes, is that they will then make changes to the tax return and have the excess refund deposited into the tax preparer's account, mm-hmm. and the taxpayer will get what they're expecting, and then down the road a year or two, all of a sudden now they're in trouble because they got more of a refund than they were entitled to. So some things to watch out for is, you know, don't go to someone whose fee is based upon a percentage of what your refund will be. That sort of encourages them to maybe take deductions and credits that you're not entitled to. And also when you're filling them out, I would be suspicious if the preparer is asking you to fill out forms that you've never had to fill out before and you haven't had any changes in your life. It seems to make sense. And also people who advertise a low fee to get you in the door and then want to charge you more, saying that you had a complex return. So ask up front what they will charge. And a special note to those who receive any type of federal or state assistance, like Section 8 housing, SSD, or TANF, please be aware that if you report false or non-existent income, that it could negatively affect your ability to participate in that programs, and you may have to not only repay the IRS, but repay those programs and be terminated from them. So you definitely should not do that. Also, ask the return preparer if they have a P-10. Not all required.
If they have a what?
A preparer identification number.
I see. Okay.
And they should put it on
the
tax
IRS?
Return. Yes, it is from the IRS. CPAs and attorneys don't need to have them, but other tax preparers do.
Let me do this. David, do you have any, and we just have a few minutes left in the statewide version, any other advice for listeners in terms of what they should be looking out for?
Well, be careful. If you've got a licensed person who's a CPA or an attorney or an EA, then
an EA is
enrolled agent for the IRS. The IRS, then you should be fine.
Mm-hmm.
It's the unlicensed people, and the IRS is trying to go through a process to get people licensed. They've had some court issues with that, but they're trying to work through that. But if you've got somebody who's licensed, they should be okay, and that should work, although occasionally there are preparers of that group that do get penalized for doing things improperly. But generally, that should be okay.
Yeah. All right, why don't we do this? Let's take a call or two before we end the first half hour, which is a statewide version of the program. And by the way, I want to let you all know that next week we are doing our Call a Lawyer Night, which we do every month, usually the fourth Wednesday of the month. And so it's the same number we're using for Call a CPA. It's 1-800-525-9917. If you do not hear the program live, if you get this program delayed, whether you listen to the program live or not, you can call in next week, which will be March 27th at 7 p.m., to speak with an attorney off the air for Call a Lawyer. On the air, we're going to be doing a program on the Homeowner's Bill of Rights, payday loans, and loan sharks. So that number again, 1-800-525-9917. And I'm being handed a note. Oh, okay. We do have, I just dropped the note. We only have, unfortunately, not all of the CPAs showed up tonight, but we do have enough people here for you. All right, let's start with Olivia. Welcome to Your Legal Rights. Are you there, Olivia? Okay, let me try Sarah. Are you there, Sarah?
Yes.
You're on the air. Your turn.
My parents recently died. They left their will and everything else in a trust. The trust is separated into one part for me, one part for my brother. My question is, I'm very concerned about how it's going to affect me and my taxes and if it's going to be considered income. And I'm worried about this because I have two children in college. And
what?
I'm...
Okay, you are going to, is this a substantial amount of property that you're inheriting?
Yes.
Like how much? What's the value?
Well,
roughly.
I mean, there's stocks and there's bonds and there's...
So you're concerned whether or not that's income and if it's going to cause you real problems. Well, let me, David, do you mind, generally speaking, by the way, the State Bar does not permit my guests to give specific legal advice on the air, but what we generally try to do is give you some direction. So what thoughts do you have for Sarah?
All right. Well, generally, an inheritance is not taxable when you receive it. If you receive something that's called income in respect of a decedent, which would be an interest from a retirement plan or an installment note, something like that, then as you collect those items, they are taxable.
Mm-hmm. As income?
Yes.
Okay.
Now, the assets, the stocks or bonds that you receive, when they generate dividends or interest, that is taxable.
Oh, sure.
But the receipt itself of the asset is not taxable.
Is there some reason, Sarah, why you wouldn't want to see an attorney about this? And help yourself not to worry so much?
Well, I'm in the process. I've been going to the same, I don't know if I can use the name of the company.
No, don't.
Okay.
Don't.
Okay, that's why I said that. I'm going to a well-known tax person. And
tax person or tax company.
Company. I go to a well-known tax company, but this year my taxes are much more complicated.
Okay.
And so I want to I'm comfortable going to this person because they're familiar with my situation, and this is, you know, I have all the forms.
Let me stop you right. Let me stop you right now, Sarah. Where do you live?
San Francisco.
Okay. Let me give you the website for the Board of Legal Specialization. My suggestion is, because I'm a real advocate that people try to help themselves by finding somebody who's really well qualified. Are you ready to write?
Yes.
www.californiaspecialist.org. Specialist is singular, californiaspecialist.org. Mm-hmm. You can go to that. That's the Board of Legal Specialization, which is part of the State Bar of California. And you can look in under San Francisco and find out who the certified specialists in taxation are and have an initial consultation and see, get another opinion from someone who is a certified specialist who's had to jump a bunch of hoops. So what we're going to do at this point is... we're going to end the first half hour. It is 7:28 at 91.7, your local public radio station, KLW in San Francisco. This is our annual Call a CPA night. I still see the CPA, Mr. Nathan, who is sitting there. I haven't seen him on the phone yet, and I'd like to see him on the phone, everybody. Let me tell you who we have here, the CPAs who are here at 1-800-525-9917. Laura Ross with the CPA firm of Eisner Amper. Martin Nathan. And we have also Frank Adam, who's one of the great loyal persons to this program and to you. He's an attorney and CPA, and if you'd like to speak to any one of them off the air, no obligation whatsoever. This is a great public service that they are doing, and each of those three persons has done this now for several years. That number, 1-800-525-9917. If you'd like to talk to my guests on the air, it's 1-415-841-4134. 1-415-841-4134, and my guests are David Hellman, a certified specialist in both tax law and estate planning, trust, and probate law, certified by the Board of Legal Specialization of the State Bar. He's also a CPA. His offices are in Marin County. My other guest is Krista Denton, low-income taxpayer clinic director, the Justice and Diversity Center of the Bar Association of San Francisco. And I welcome you to call in and ask a question, make a comment, let us know. Sarah, are you still there? I guess you're gone. Okay, well, Sarah, I hope that you will call the Board of Legal Specialization, frankly, and get another opinion, because it sounds like maybe it's something that you need to see a specialist on and try to lower your anxiety, frankly. So, all right, who do we have now? We've got Denise. Denise, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Hi, your turn, my dear.
Okay, I'm concerned about the... community property according to publication 555 of the IRS. Community domestic partners, it seems, are required to file as if they were in as community property.
Yeah.
And so is that true or not true? I mean, I'm looking at it right now on the internet, and it says questions and answers for registered domestic partners and same-sex spouses in community property states.
Mm-hmm.
It appears that you are required to file federal taxes as if you were apparently married, which doesn't make sense.
Hold on. I think David is shaking. David is shaking his...
555. I just...
All right. Denise?
The IRS website and put in domestic partners,
yeah.
And this is
Denise,
what pops up.
Denise,
and
stop.
I have a friend who's actually filing federal tax...
Okay. Denise, can you hear me? Stop. Stop. I want David Hellman to respond to your concern here, and he can hopefully get you going in the right direction. Just a moment, if you would. David, please.
Generally, you do not file a joint return for federal. Excuse me, you do for California if you choose to. But because it's community income, you have responsibility for reporting half of each domestic partner's income on the returns.
On the federal return as well as the California return?
Yes. And, well, California, you can file a joint return, but...
But not federal.
Not federal, but you do have to look at each domestic partner's income and report. You show what yours is, but then show part of it going off to the other partner, and then you pick up half of the other partner's. So it gets complicated.
Is that in for the IRS?
Yes.
Okay, so how would you file a return? Was it 1040 for both people or 1040 for one? Or how?
No, each domestic partner files a 1040.
Each domestic, using the community property laws.
Correct.
So each would, okay. It's not quite clear here, but it does, publication 555 does indicate that there's a difference in if you're a domestic partner.
Denise, let me ask you this. Have you been listening to the first half hour of the program?
Yes, I have, and I actually called your CPAs, and they said they didn't believe me.
They didn't
and
believe
I
you.
I call them back, and they're
hey, wait a minute. I don't. I'm sorry to hear they said they didn't believe you, but
no, they didn't. I told them to go to the IRS.
Okay,
take a second.
All right. Let me ask you this.
Type in domestic partners
Denise?
IRS.gov, and there's a whole page.
Okay, I got you, Denise, but let me ask you this. Are we dealing with, for each of the domestic partners, are we dealing with income of less than $51,000?
No, it's more than
Is it more than that? Okay.
It's $117,000.
Is that the combined income?
No, that's for one person. The other one doesn't work.
Oh, I see. Okay.
So the one of the domestic partners works. The other one does not work.
Okay.
And so they claim they have to file domestic partner.
All right. Let me stop you. Let me stop you. Denise, let me stop you. I want to make some direction or give some suggestion to you since obviously you are very concerned about this. And maybe what I should do is ask you, David, to make a suggestion
right.
first.
Well, I would suggest she see a preparer get this resolved that way because this is more complicated than something that you could do yourself.
Yeah.
No, I understand that, but I'm just saying, I'm not going to do it. I'm not a domestic partner. But I'm curious to know if this is a law, if you actually have to file that way or it's optional.
No, it's not optional, and this is a change from the IRS's position before, but this is what it is now, so this is what they require.
They do require
it. We're going to move on, Denise.
Okay, thank you very much.
Good luck to you. Yeah, and see whoever is involved with this. I don't know if it may be someone who is related to you or not, but... the person or persons need to see a preparer, whether it's a CPA or a tax-certified specialist through the Board of Legal Specialization. This is important enough that someone should want to see someone who has a lot of experience in dealing with this kind of stuff. So thank you very much for calling. Our number is 1-415-841-4134. And Ted, welcome to the program.
Oh, thanks.
Sure.
I have a question about an estate. It might, you had that previous caller, Sarah.
Yes.
She sparked a notion. I went through this last year. My parents died. They had an estate. It went into a trust. The trust is now, I'm the sole beneficiary, the trustee. And I'm not getting any income from the estate. It's just sitting there. So I'm filing an individual tax return for myself. And the estate is responsible for filing its own return. And that might help Sarah. But my question is, last year I had to get a special software to file for the estate, a business software. And it had all this fiduciary information in a form K-1, which were all blank because there were no distribution from the estate. And I'm wondering, why do I have to go through that? Can't I just file the estate as an individual and pay its taxes?
No, an estate has to use a Form 1041
right. For
federal and a Form 541 for California.
Uh-huh.
And so you have to file those forms and use those rules. The tax rates are much different
for
an estate or a trust than they are for individuals.
And that's the answer to my question.
Okay, great. Good luck to you, Ted. Thank you very much for being so succinct with your question. Good luck to you. By the way, I want to mention to you something. Last week, we did a program on prevention of elder abuse. It was the second episode that we did because we had so many calls on the topic back in January when we did it the first time. One of my guests was Santa Clara County Deputy DA Janet Berry, and Janet brought to my attention something that she wanted me to communicate to you to clarify something. And last week, one of the listeners called in and told us about an elderly friend who needed medical care for shingles. And the Adult Protective Services, APS, by the way, which is a part of all counties throughout the state of California. Every county has an Adult Protective Services, usually called an Adult Protective Services. In this situation, the APS was notified about this, and so they visited the elder. The caller said that APS took the elder into custody. Those were his words, into custody, and kept her for 5 months, which resulted in the elder dying of heart failure. And he was very upset about this. And what Janet Berry, Deputy DA Janet Berry, said is that APS cannot simply grab someone and keep them. If APS suspects that an elder has been abused, they get the elder medical care. If the APS investigation reveals that the elder needs protection from abusers or is a danger to herself or himself, there's no one to care for this person, the public guardian petitions the court for conservatorship of the elder. And it's not an easy or simple task. The court schedules a public hearing to determine what's best for the elder, and if necessary, appoints the public guardian to look out for him or her. And if it is true that the caller's friend was cared for in a senior facility, which this caller mentioned, it is because a judge found her circumstances dire enough to do so. And Janet Berry ends this by saying to me that APS cannot take someone into custody. They cannot arrest anyone. So I hope that clarifies that for you. You know, we started the program talking about, as part of the first part, student debt and students who had moved back with their parents or hadn't left their parents. For those of you who may be interested and confronted with student debt, the San Mateo County Law Library is going to have next month, April 11th, at noon, a free lecture on student debt. It will be presented by attorney Jonathan Larson, and I wanted to alert you to that. It's at noontime. The law library is across the street from the Hall of Justice on Hamilton Street, and I'll continue to talk about this in case you're interested. Again, it's for April 11th. All right, who do we have here? We have Leah. Leah, welcome to your legal rights. Leah, are you there?
Yes.
Yeah, go ahead. You're right on.
Okay.
Yeah, and turn your radio down, Leah.
Okay.
Turn your radio down. You're on the air. Are you there, Leah? Leah, where are you? Okay, Leah. I don't know. We have gremlins running tonight, obviously. All right, let me give you our number here again for your legal rights and the preparing your 2012 tax return. It's 1-415-841-4134. If you want to speak to one of our CPAs off the air, it's 1-800-525-9917. 1-800-525-9917. We have the phone is blinking. I need to know who's up next because I want to let this person know that he or she can talk to my guests. And Margaret, welcome to Your Legal Rights.
Hey, thank you so much.
Okay. Good to hear you, Margaret.
My cousin died in May of last year, and I am the administrator of his estate. And right now I have to file his taxes. And he was independently employed, and he left terrible records. But I have to file his taxes. Should I just get, like, the bank statements? He had a business. So he had a business account. I'm not sure how to... He'd left terrible records. So how should I do that?
Well, let me ask you this, if I may, Margaret. Did your cousin have an accountant or a bookkeeper who worked with him?
Well, I think he did, but I'm not sure because his records were terrible. The last account, the last tax return that I found was in 2005. But I know that he's filed taxes since then. So I assume it's the same person. But he didn't leave really great records of the income from his business.
How did you ever get lassoed into becoming the, I don't know if you're the executor or whatever, but how did you ever get lassoed?
I'm the administrator, and it's because I live closest than anyone else.
When you say the administrator, what do you mean by that?
Well, I was made the administrator of his estate because he didn't leave a will.
He did not.
He died quite suddenly.
What a shame. That's too bad. So, okay, you're a relative, you live close to him, and there is, the county has set up an estate for him, is that correct?
Yes.
Okay. What comments do you have for her, David?
Well, I think initially, if you want to try to find who the tax preparer was, you might request from the IRS a copy of the last several years' tax returns.
Okay.
And that might indicate who the preparer was on it. It should, if you can, if he did file the returns, because that would then give you a clue. In the meantime, I would suggest, yes, get copies of the bank statements, go through, figure out what money went in, see if you can figure out the source of it, whether it's taxable or not taxable. See if you can get copies of the checks that went through the account so you can tell whether or not they would be deductible expenses. So you could start your homework there.
Is that sufficient, is having the bank statements, because he did have a business account.
Right. Well, you're going to...
Will that be sufficient?
Well, you're going to want to look at his business account and his personal account. Because it's possible that other income went into the personal account that wasn't business-related.
No, I don't think so. I think he was fairly fastidious in that. He did have separate business and personal accounts.
Right, but the personal account...
I can't find any records.
Right, but for instance, if he had interest on a bank account or sold some stock and got proceeds from that, that would probably be put into his personal account. So that's why you're going to want to see that.
We've sort of figured that part out, the personal, but not the business.
Another thing that you could do is when you you can go down to any IRS walk-in agency and also ask for the 2012 wage and income transcript, because that will tell you what the IRS or what has been reported to the IRS, what his income was. And those are things you definitely want to address and make sure you include on the return.
The 2012, but
you can get them going back farther than that as well.
But I mean, he has not filed the 2012.
Right, but they will give you a transcript of
what does that mean? For those of us who don't know what that means.
It lists all of the 1099s and W-2s that have been reported to the IRS.
I got it.
Okay.
Do you think he did that, Margaret?
I think that he kept his personal and business accounts very separate.
Really? Did he?
Yeah.
How old was he?
He was almost 60.
I'm surprised he did not have a will. I find that very strange.
No, he did not.
For
and
a business
I'm
person.
I'm dealing with that.
Very strange.
Awful. And he had a property and,
Did he have a lawyer, Margaret?
No,
he did not.
Not.
Well, he was a high flyer, obviously, apparently.
No, he was kind of a low flyer, actually.
Yeah, well, good luck to you.
But so I can just, the accounts that I can get from his business account at the bank, that should be sufficient to file his tax return?
Well, unless you have any reason to believe there's something else, but the suggestion...
No, I think there's not. Everything else was personal, and we've sort of
that
already.
The suggestion of going and getting the transcript is a good one. You want to see what the IRS has by way of information, because if you don't report everything they have, you will get a love letter back from them saying, you owe us some money.
We love you. Mm-hmm. The IRS has that lovely letter, we love you. Margaret, good luck.
I'd love to avoid that.
Yeah. Good luck to you. Have a pleasant tax season, Margaret.
Thank you so much.
It sounds like it's not going to be fun.
You know, on that note, if I could just say one thing.
Don't go away, Margaret. Here's Krista.
Just to everyone.
Okay.
When you get a letter from the IRS, don't ignore it. Yeah. Once you've regained your ability for your heart to beat, open it up, because you will only make the situation worse for yourself if you do not open. A lot of things have time limits, so always open up your mail from the IRS.
Margaret, take care.
That.
Good luck. Thanks for calling. All right, our Call a Lawyer lawyers are going to be next week. That is on March 27th, but tonight is our Call a CPA night. And it's 1-800-525-9917. I want to thank very much the CPAs who have joined us, Laura Ross, Martin Nathan, and Frank Adam, who's also an attorney. And each of these persons has done this several times. We've been doing Call a CPA Night for a number of years. And one of my guests here, David Hellman, has... I think David was here when they built this building... No, he wasn't. But David has been a great, incredibly generous with his time and his knowledge in being here to do our annual tips for preparing your tax return. And then he usually does one in either October or November that we do to kind of give you some preparation or give you a chance to think about it. And so, again, it's David Hellman, certified specialist in tax law as well as estate planning, trust, and probate law. My other guest is Krista Denton, low-income taxpayer, clinic director, the Justice and Diversity Center of the Bar Association of San Francisco. And by the way, there are some things on the IRS website where you might be able to find out about the Volunteer Tax Assistance Program. How do they find the clinics that you've been talking about? There are four of them in the Bay Area that you're talking about, and I presume there's some down in Southern California or throughout the state. How do they find that out again?
They can go to the IRS website and type in low-income taxpayer clinic, and they'll get the list and
And it's all no charge, if you qualify, if you're under a certain amount of income. All right, we have Oriana. Welcome to the program. Wait a minute. Let me see. Oh, I'm sorry. John, welcome to the program.
Hello, you talking to me?
Are you John?
Yes.
John, I'm talking to you. Welcome.
Okay. I tuned in a few minutes late.
John, never do that again.
I might have already covered this, but I've heard that it's illegal not to file a tax return, even if you don't have any money to pay them, if you don't owe any money. And what I like to ask is, what's the point of a law like that? It just makes extra work for me and the IRS.
Mm. All right, let me get some comments. Turn your radio back up, John, so you can hear the answer. Who wants to answer this, Krista?
Well, there is thresholds where if your income is below a certain amount or your income is only Social Security, that you do not need to file a tax return.
Mm-hmm.
So for someone... a single filer, it's just over $6,000.
Mm-hmm.
And so you would need to go to the IRS website to find out what that number is. However, I will say that even if you don't have a requirement to file a tax return, regardless of your thoughts about doing so, it is a good idea because it's a good way to protect yourself from identity theft, because that's on the rise. And the people who are being hit the most are those who are receiving, say, Social Security, and they have not filed a tax return for years. their someone gets a hold of their number, starts using it, and they start filing tax returns. So it's a good idea to file a tax return, sometimes even if you don't need to and you're not going to get any money back.
How would it be, I'm sorry, explain, how would the identity theft come up in that without a very long explanation?
Well, there are very bad people out there who will
that.
Steal mail, you know, do phishing, do different things to get your Social Security number, your name, all your identifying information. So you need to keep that very private. And, you know, they'll figure out, you know, if someone's elderly, seems to be getting benefits, and then they'll start passing the number around, sometimes to several different people, and then you'll get returns, and then you'll have problems later on. And it also keeps the IRS informed of what your current address is.
All right. Well, that's very good advice.
I mean, the other issue is if you have self-employment income of over $400, then you also have to file. So you need to check. But all of this information about the filing requirements is right up on the IRS website.
Yeah.
So you just check, and that will tell you whether you need to file or not.
John, do you have a computer you can use on the Internet? John, are you gone? I guess he is. Okay. Ariana, welcome to Your Legal Rights.
Hi.
Hi.
Forgive me if you already covered this, but I'm sure there's other people who would like to hear it anyway. The earned income credit thing, I'm single. I don't have children. Does that automatically disqualify me?
No, it does not. The amount of the earned income tax credit that you will receive is lower than if you had children, but if your income is below a certain amount, you can apply for the earned income tax credit and receive it, as well as usually a making work pay credit.
Yeah, and most tax software automatically calculates that if you use a computer software as opposed to seeing a preparer. If you go to a preparer, they will automatically do it also.
And on the IRS website also, they do have versions of TurboTax and different plans where if your income is below a certain amount, you can utilize the software right off of the branch off the IRS website, and you can use that, so you don't have to go out and buy the software.
So it's free to use, is that what you're saying?
Yes, so you go to the IRS website and you can look at the different options they have for the software programs to file free.
Okay, is there anyone you'd recommend? Because in the past I've you know, you can waste so much time on these things and then somehow they don't work, or I don't know. I remember one year I investigated the earned income credit for a long time and it turned out I wasn't eligible, and it was kind of frustrating. It was like, you know, I wish they could just tell you quickly, like, if you make this much money, you're eligible. If you make this much money, you're not. You have to have kids, you don't have to have kids, that kind of thing.
TurboTax is one of the more popular ones. I'll say the years past, sometimes they didn't have enough questions in there to make sure that you didn't take something that, like the earned income tax credit, if you weren't eligible for it. But I looked at it, and they have made significant improvements to it, and asking you over and over lots of different questions to make sure that that doesn't happen.
Okay. I was a graduate student until June, so I don't know if would that make my thing complicated?
It's hard to say. I don't think we have enough information, Ariana, to give you a response to that. But David wanted to say something to you.
No, it's again, you can look at if you want to just get general information, the IRS does have publications, and the instructions on the form for the earned income credit do tell you the parameters of when you qualify and when you don't qualify.
And you can access that on the Internet.
Right. That's
at
www.irs.gov.
Yeah.
And they have fillable forms.
They have what forms?
Fillable forms. All of the IRS forms that you would then file, you can fill them in.
Right on the
online, and then print them out.
Online and then print them out.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And Chuck, can you just repeat one more time where low-income people could go for free tax help?
Would you do that, Krista?
Yes. The best way to find if you have access to a computer is to go to the IRS website, and you can put in VITA, or Volunteer Income Tax Preparation, and they will pull up something where they ask for your zip code. Put that in, and they will list the ones near you, the languages they serve, their hours that they're open, and then you can call and make an appointment and go in. Or you can call 211 or the United Way.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Hey, terrific. Thank you very much, Ariana, for calling. And good luck with your taxes, okay? We have another John. John, welcome to your legal rights.
Hi.
Hi.
Yeah, this is a very general question. I'm married, but with no kids. And I'm just wondering, when is it best to file jointly or as a single person for both?
You're from England, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. How long have you been here, John?
About 20 years.
No, and is your wife also English?
No.
Oh, she's not? And do both of you work?
Yes.
Why wouldn't you want... Have you not filed a joint return?
We have, but I'm just wondering, are there any circumstances when it's more advantageous to file... Because I believe you can, even when you're married, you can file singly.
Well,
I'm just wondering if there are any circumstances where it's beneficial to do that.
All right. Well, it's instead of filing singly, you're actually married filing separately.
Oh, that's what I mean.
Right. There are sometimes, really what you want to do is to calculate it both ways and see which one comes out the best.
Okay.
Over 90% of the time, I have found that it's better to use married filing jointly. But there are occasions, particular circumstances that people have where you come out with less tax liability if you file married filing separately.
We're going to move on.
John,
we got to move on. You can talk with one of our IRS, one of our CPA people. We don't have any more time. 1-800-525-9917. I just want to mention to you, as we have 1 minute left, that if you have a legal problem, you may need to talk to a lawyer. The Bar Association of San Francisco's Lawyer Referral Service can arrange an appointment for you to meet with an attorney experienced in the area of law related to your situation. This is a public service of the Bar Association of San Francisco. For a referral to a lawyer, call 415-989-1616. That's 415-989-1616. This information is brought to you by the Bar Association of San Francisco and KLW listeners like you. If you're in San Mateo County, the San Mateo County Bar Association also has a lawyer referral service. You can call your own at 650-369-4149, 650-369-4149. And if you're in any other county in California, every county has a bar association and a lawyer referral service. And usually for half an hour, it's a low of $25, maybe a high of $35. I want to thank you both very much for joining us.
You're welcome.
It went too fast. It just went too fast. David Hellman, thank you very much for coming back after, I guess, what we've been doing this about 40 or 50, not quite that long, at least 10 years. David Hellman, certified specialist in tax law and estate planning, trust and probate law, certified by the Board of Legal Specialization offices in Marin County, and Krista Denton, low-income taxpayer, clinic director, the Justice and Diversity Center of the Bar Association of San Francisco. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Your Legal Rights production staff members, program engineer Joanne Marr, production assistant Martin McLean. Funding for Your Legal Rights is made possible by the Board of Legal Specialization of the State Bar of California, the Trusts and Estates section of the State Bar, the Labor and Employment Law section of the State Bar, the Lawyer Referral Service of the Bar Association of San Francisco, the California Applicants Attorneys Association, and the San Mateo County Bar Association. Next week, call a lawyer night, 1-800-525-9917. Thank you very much for joining us. I'm Chuck Finney. We'll be right back.